and welcome to this month's edition of Patrolling the Channel, a podcast designed to help you, the solution provider, help your customer. Today we're going to talk about service portfolios, what they are, and how they'll be helpful to security channel professionals. Joining me today is Michael DeSabato, Vice President and Service Director of Network and Telecom Strategies for the research firm Burton Group. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Michael, now you've done some work with service portfolios, so why don't you set the stage here? What are some of the benefits of a solution provider creating a service portfolio?
Well, for a solution provider, a service portfolio gives him a nice catalog that he can show his clients and potential customers of all of the services that they're able to offer. Within that portfolio would be a definition of the service level agreement. If it's an internal service, most often there is a business benefit tied to this, so there's some return on the investment or some impact on the business that the positive impact that would be shown within the service catalog. For those that are selling services, you could use that same kind of thing and show why having a customer buy the service from you rather than insource it would be a good idea.
What qualifies as a service? It's kind of a general term, so how can a solution provider define one?
Actually, almost anything can be defined as a service. The example I use all the time is email. That's something people don't even think about as a service. If you take your internal email system and decide that you're going to host it on Google or one of the exchange hosting service providers, then it indeed is a service because you're relying on somebody external to you to provide you with the technology and storage and clients and that and whatnot that you need to go and just do something as simple as read your email. We look at telephony as a service, and we have for a long, long time, but that's another one. Any kind of application hosting would be a service. Any kind of web hosting would be a service. So just about anything can be called a service.
What kinds of information do you need to be telling folks about your email service, about your application hosting service?
The uptime would be good. If you've had some experience with mean time to be between failure, what listing that would be good. Response time for an application would be an essential piece of the service level agreement. With email, that's sort of asynchronous and it's an interrupt-driven kind of thing, and it would be very hard to find out that it took 1 minute and 10 seconds to get an email versus 1 minute and four. So putting a service level agreement there probably is a little bit more difficult, other than to say that the service would be available 24/7 or during some period of time outside a maintenance window that you might want to put up.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the characteristics of any kind of technology service that you would supply internally as an enterprise IT department.
What does the customer want to see in a service portfolio?
The cost, the service level agreement, the definition of what that service covers. Let's go back to email. If you're going to allow attachments, what's the attachment size? If you're going to allow storage on the service provider's server itself, how big is the mailbox going to be? If you're going to have graduated service levels in terms of mailbox size, what's the cost for each different mailbox size? If it's going to be 20 gigabyte or 100 gigabyte or whatever it's going to be.
What about something like application services?
Some of the things that you need to go and look at is what would be the high availability characteristics that you're going to have, what's your failover plan, what's response time going to be, how much data storage are you going to allow, how much is incremental data storage going to be. If I want that data then backed up onto servers internally, what's it going to cost me to have a connection back to my home office to do that? And for that matter, what would it cost to have a dedicated connection into your server farm, into your hosting location, so that I wasn't running this over the internet and subject to the vagaries of that?
So what are some emerging services?
Well, the big trend going to the cloud is I guess the biggest service of them all, but In my experience, you can get services that cover the gamut of anything that an internal IT department would offer: email, telephony, voicemail, unified communications if you're going down that route. Hosted PBXs are a service. application hosting. Amazon's E2C is a huge one for virtualized instances, and you're seeing more and more of that come out where people need capacity, and they buy this instance for a few hours, and then they shut the thing down. They get a bill from Amazon for the computer time that they used. In many respects, if you wind the clock back to the days of TimeNet, CompuServe, and America Online, you were looking then at the precursor of, and all the other time-sharing services that were out there, you were looking at the precursor of what we have for cloud-based services and cloud-based virtualization right now.
Once you have your portfolio, now what are some ongoing steps that you need to take with portfolio maintenance?
That's a huge thing, and a lot of the clients that I talk to from Burton Group forget that. You need to put that through a change management process, just like anything else that goes on within IT. As newer technology comes on board, you need to update the portfolio and either say that you have a new and improved server offering or virtualized server offering, or you can say that you have a different class of server offering where you were running this thing on a 4-core Intel server, and now you're running it on an 8-core. Or instead of having a single core for your VM instance, you're running parallel cores. There's a number of things that you can do with this thing in terms of portfolio maintenance, but the portfolio maintenance usually occurs in concert with a new product offering or an upgrade to an existing product offering.
When you're creating a service portfolio, where do you start? What are the first steps?
Yeah, the first steps in that generally revolve around figuring out what it is you're going to sell. And for service providers that are targeting, enterprise clients, that's what your marketing message is. So if you're going to become a web hoster, the service catalog or the service portfolio that you're going to offer is various levels of hosting, various levels of bandwidth, various levels of disk space. Maybe for some of them, you're going to throw in a free SSL certificate that gets renewed every year. Maybe you're going to do domain hosting for some of them. The service portfolio then becomes your marketing collateral. These are the things we're selling you. These are the things that you can buy from us.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kinds of services can be offered that can be done by third parties? We've talked about a few of them.
Well, in addition to the ones I mentioned, you could do network and systems management. That's one that is outsourcing of the monitoring and managing of the infrastructure for IT is something that's looked at. Some companies have decided that their service desk or their help desk is something they're going to outsource, so that's another service that you can offer. Obviously, there's consulting that can always be offered as a service.
Can you think of any other particular combinations that mesh well with each other and mesh well perhaps with the core competencies of a security solution provider?
Well, if you're a security solution provider, then you could co-brand something with a network provider, and thereby you're supplying your customer with a secure network solution based on something that you're reselling as a third party from that network provider, and that you are also supplying internally to that network provider, possibly. So that would be one. Another would be from security solutions, once again, management of desktops or, end-user computing devices. It's most desktops now look funny like a laptop. So there's another possible solution. There's a number of things you can do in terms of that would be intrusion detection, intrusion prevention, monitoring. So instead of having the enterprise looking after that equipment, you could be the external service provider that was monitoring the events and incidents that went on inside an enterprise network and alerting them to any potential security breaches or security conditions that they would have to respond to. Taking that one step further, you could also be the person that initiates the response to those incidents.
Mm-hmm. How do you know what services don't work as part of a product portfolio? When do you know it's the right decision to kill off a service offering?
That's one that sometimes has to come from historical experience. If you have a particular offering that is either not accepted and not bought or purchased, that might be a good idea to kill that one. If you have one that you find after time is too costly for you to do, even though it is something your clients want, if you're not making money at it, then it needs to be wound down and terminated, or it needs to be looked at and examined and find a more profitable way to do it. Unless that loss leader, it is a loss leader, and you're using that to gain other more profitable services.
What do you think are some of common mistakes that are made?
To be too aggressive in their service level agreements. There's always a balance that's going to be fought with setting those. Your clients are going to want you to be perfect, and there's a reality that perfection is a good goal to aim for, but probably is not in reality attainable. So there has to be a balance that you strike and a balance that you know is cost-effectively achievable within your organization and yet high enough for people to look at this, for your clients and potential clients to look at this and say, this is something that's reasonable that I can go live with.
What's holding you responsible for those claims that you make?
Well, I would say if you're signing contracts with your clients, then that's a contractual obligation on your part.
Mm-hmm.
If the contract reads like many that I've negotiated and signed in the past, there may be certain financial penalties if you fail to meet the service level agreements that you've decided to put out. I don't want to get into the legalities of this thing, but if they're far enough off base, you might be sued for false advertising. They have to be achievable from and economically achievable from your perspective and economically attractive from the customer's perspective.
Okay, great. So it's just as the final question here, what would you say is the ultimate gain that a channel professional can get from a strong service portfolio?
A strong service portfolio is an excellent marketing tool. That service portfolio proves to your prospects that you have a commitment to offering a broad range of services and a synergistic range of services that cost effectively, that you're confident enough that you can provide these services in terms of the economies that allow you to make a profit and at a level that allow them to do their to outsource to you and to conduct their business that way.
Okay, great. Thanks for your time, Michael.
My pleasure. You have a great day.
Thanks. That's it for this month's edition of Patrolling the Channel. See you next month.